and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
So what we are saying is there's nothing working in Malawi. Our things are going up. Fuel has gone up. And there's hunger in Malawi. And we are dismayed by his decision to sell maize to Zimbabwe. So we are saying, as concerned citizens, we have endorsed those demonstrations, and they will happen on 14th next week.
A political pressure group says it will participate in demonstrations this week to demand the resignation of Malawian President Lazarus Chakwera and Vice President Saulos Chilima.
On the 1st of July, the Drug Enforcement Commission announces that they've seized the property and that they did not know who the owner was, because according to them, the property had been abandoned for some time and they decided to seize the property.
Lawyer for Zambia's former First Lady, Mrs. Esther Lungu, says the seizure of properties belonging to her by a state institution appears to be an attempt to embarrass her.
We are paying all these things, and when we demand for 20% cola, that becomes a problem. No, I don't think it should be a problem, because we have tightened our belt enough. We are paying the taxes as government demands, and then we demand that we see the effect of these taxes as well.
And the Union of Ghanaian Professional Nurses and Midwives is calling for at least a 20% increase in cost of living allowances. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Police in South Africa say two bar shootings have left 19 people dead. One incident took place in a township close to Johannesburg and another in eastern South Africa. In Soweto, 15 people were killed as they enjoyed a night out when assailants drew up in a minibus taxi and began randomly firing at bar patrons. There were no details regarding the attackers and no one has yet been arrested. The French press agency journalists say hundreds of people were massed behind police cordon Sunday as police investigated. Only a small poster showing beer prices at the bar could be seen outside the establishment. Police led away relatives of those caught up in the drama who tried to approach the crime scene. In the eastern city of Pietermaritzburg, police reported four people were killed and eight wounded during a shootout in a bar after two men fired discriminately at customers. Police sources said it was too early to say if the assaults were in some way connected, but observed their similarity. The shootings come a week after 21 people recently died at a tavern in East London, South Africa. In Malawi, the political pressure group called Concerned Citizens says it will participate in demonstrations this week to demand the resignation of President Lazarus Chakwera and Vice President Saulos Chilima. Together with the civil society group, the Human Rights Ambassadors, the organizers say they will also demand fresh elections following the resignations of the country's two top leaders. Their demands, they say, come after the president suspended some senior public officials and sidelined the vice president over allegations of corruption. By reacting to the move, the vice president also demanded the president be stripped of his immunity from prosecution. The groups say the ongoing tension between the two men is a clear demonstration that it's time for fresh elections so Malawians can choose new leaders. But critics say the demands are unconstitutional and an affront to democracy. For more on the planned protests and the demands for the resignation of the president and his vice president, I reach Oliver Nakoma. He is the chairman of Concerned Citizens and one of the leading organizers of the planned demonstration.
Since this government has been voted in power in 2020, prices have been going up. We, the Concerned Citizens, have endorsed the demonstrations and we will join the demos to call for resignation of the president. You may wish to know that when he was voted into power in 2020, he promised Malawians to change the way things are run in Malawi. And he promised to say if he doesn't change in 3 years, he will step down. So what we are saying is there's nothing working in Malawi. Our things are going up. Fuel has gone up. And there's hunger in Malawi. And we are dismayed by his decision to sell maize to Zimbabwe. So we are saying, as concerned citizens, we have endorsed those demonstrations. And they will happen on 14th next week.
But calling for the resignation of the president is not captured in the constitution. So this call, some people said, is unconstitutional. How do you respond to that?
Despite that is not constitutional, but we are quoting his words. The president himself, when he was doing campaign prior to 2020 elections, he said, and I quote, "If I don't perform in 2 years, I will resign." So what he said is to say he will deliver in that 2 years all his promises. You may to know that he promised a passport of 14,000 here in Malawi. Now the passport has gone up to maybe 300,000. He said that the bag of fertilizer will be around 4,500. Now it has gone up to 80,000. And as I'm talking today, Malawi is lacking a lot of commodities and even forex. We don't have forex in Malawi. This is making traders not to trade, not to import a lot of commodities. Prices of the commodities are going up. And recently, the president and his cabinet said that, for example, wheat flour, prices have gone up because there's a war in Ukraine. So we are saying, despite that there's war in Ukraine, we needed homegrown solutions. As the president, as a flag of the nation, he would have found a way of making sure that the things have gone down. And also Malawians have been given solutions. But look, Malawians have been taken for granted. Oh, he promised there's nothing he's fulfilling. So because he said that if he doesn't do anything in 2 years, he will resign, we are just reminding him to do what he promised, bearing in mind that he's a person who can keep his words.
So what will happen next if he doesn't resign?
If he does not resign, I tell you, there'll be space of food demonstrations. Malawians will demonstrate up until the president resigns. We're also going to lobby the parliament to say we seek a way on how we can impeach the president, or else we call for a referendum to say those people who voted for him, they should also say if they like him to keep on ruling. Because in Malawi and elsewhere, presidents are given mandates by the people who vote for them. So if the people are saying we need to go for a referendum to test his popularity, why not? He should go for a referendum so that he may test his popularity and see if the people of Malawi are going to vote for his government again.
Fuel prices are very high all around the world. Even wealthy nations' economies have been battered by not only the effect of war in Ukraine, but also the COVID-19 pandemic, which forced a lot of economies to shut down. So calling on him to keep his promises when things are out of his control isn't fair, some of his supporters say. How do you respond to that?
I would like to take you back to say, when we were going for elections in 2020, COVID-19 was there. These promises were made amidst COVID-19. There's nothing new that has come. What has come is only war in Ukraine, which we are saying here in Malawi, if we had homegrown solutions, this war wouldn't have affected us. When we go back in Africa, in Malawi and in Africa as a whole, leaders do promise the moon when they know that they do not deliver. So we will set this as an example. It's not only in Malawi, but it is in Africa. Leaders in Africa, when they want to be voted into power, they promise everything. They promise even heaven on earth. So we'd like to set an example to say, when you are going for a position of the president, so coming back on the issue of COVID, we are saying, well, in 2020, COVID pandemic was in progress, and we voted when COVID was there. So there's nothing that we can say he did not know. It means, as I've said, here in Africa, in Malawi and other countries, when people are promising voters, when people are going for campaign, they cheat voters once they know that they cannot deliver. So this should be put to a stop, because people should be promising things that are realistic to their voters, not cheating them.
Oliver Nakoma is the chairman of Concerned Citizens and one of the leading organizers of the planned demonstration. He spoke with me from the Malawian capital, Lilongwe. Former Malawian president has sharply denied allegations of involvement in the killing of albinos. Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika says the accusations are politically motivated. The former president says it appears his political opponents want to use the allegations and subsequent investigations to tarnish his reputation. He says the allegations come after traditional chiefs and prominent leaders called on him to seek a second and final term in the next election. His remarks also follow a decision by the Director of Public Prosecutions to investigate him and Heather Wickin-Taba, a special advisor and cabinet minister in the former administration, over their alleged involvement in the murder of an albino man, McDonald Masumbuka. But the former president says he established a commission to investigate the killings of albinos to propose solutions for ending the murders. He has since called on President Lazarus Chakwera to release the findings of the report compiled by the commission. In part two of this phone interview, Former President Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika tells me that some people want him to run for president in the next general election.
Mr. President, you said there are calls by some Malawians for you to run against the incumbent president because things are not doing so good. Are you considering that call for you to return?
I've not responded to calls for my return. As you know, that my re-election was nullified by, obviously, the opposition, the present government, colluding with the judiciary. It's not coming out very clearly that the whole thing was a conspiracy, a judicial coup d'etat. So I was driven out of the government after 1 year. I had 4 years to go. I was driven out. So some people feel that I should complete my term, that the projects I started for this country that will really bring this country forward, which the present government is unable to do. So some people would like me to retire. There are all those calls, including today, for example, a delegation of chiefs and religious leaders this afternoon. That's why I couldn't respond to a call earlier. It's a meeting urged me to publicly declare that I'm going to return and run again in 2025. I'm taking everything under advisement at the moment. I've not responded to those calls. I'll respond at the right time.
Mr. President, have you called on current President Dr. Lazarus Chakwera to release the report that was compiled under you about the killing of albinos in Malawi? Have you officially petitioned him to do that?
No, I do not necessarily petition him to do that. He's supposed to release it, but in my statement, I asked him to release the report. I have the report. If he doesn't release it, then I'm going to release it. I would rather he does it out of my respect for the presidency. He should do it. Why is he resisting releasing the report? He should do it. He himself testified before this commission. Why is he refusing to release it? So I'll not do it. But if he continues to hide the report, yes, I'll release it to the public.
So what is your response to the people of Malawi after hearing all these allegations or rumors of your involvement, allegedly, of the killing of albinos in the Republic of Malawi?
No, I responded that this is false. It's complete nonsense. I issued a statement to that effect, including when this story surfaced, I issued a lengthy statement, which was reproduced in the, the thing I sent you, my voice. But I can send you my original statement on my stationery, official stationery, explaining, distancing myself, and condemning this scurrilous, malicious, and evil attempt to spare my name and also the name of Dr. Ntaba.
Professor Arthur Peter Mutharika is a former president of Malawi. He spoke with me from the capital, Lilongwe. In Zambia, a lawyer for former First Lady Mrs. Esther Lungu says the seizure of properties of 15 houses belonging to her by the Drug Enforcement Commission appears to be an attempt to embarrass her. She says her fundamental rights to property have been violated by the government agency. She accuses the organization of failing to undertake a basic inquiry at the Ministry of Lands to determine whether she owns the properties. In a letter through attorney Makebi Zulu, Lungu maintains the seizures are illegal, warning that the government agency is trespassing and demanding the properties be released immediately. The demand comes after the Drug Enforcement Commission recently seized 15 properties in the capital, Lusaka, saying they were abandoned by unknown owners. At the time, the commission announced that they were seized because they were suspected to be the proceeds of crime. But Lungu says she acquired the property in 2015 and has since been developing them. She expressed concern that the seizures appear to be politically motivated. For more reaction to the seized houses, I reach attorney Makebi Zulu.
On the 1st of July, the Drug Enforcement Commission announces that they've seized the property and that they did not know who the owner was. because according to them, the property had been abandoned for some time and they decided to seize the property. And they state that upon gaining entry, they came across documentation that suggested that it belonged to a person named Esther Nyawa Tembo. And they know that name to be the name for the first lady. So what do? They pull a media stint and say, we have gotten this property. We don't know who the owner is, but there is this person so named. They don't even bother to conduct a basic search at the Ministry of Lands so that they find out who the actual owner is. In any case, they are not stating what is wrong with the property that they've come across. If they didn't know who the purported owner is, how are they coming to a conclusion that this must be something that is coming out of proceeds of crime or anything, because they don't know who the owner is?
During the seizures, the DEC or the Drug Enforcement Commission said the properties are alleged to be in proceeds of crime.
That conclusion was premature. So you can't come to a conclusion that this is proceeds of crime if you don't know who the owner is, firstly. Secondly, if you don't know the capacity of the owner, how do you conclude it's proceeds of crime? And you don't know how they built that property. You have no idea whatsoever, and you come to a conclusion that it's proceeds of crime. This is malicious. It's been a witch hunt against the former First family, because we have attended the Drug Enforcement Commission with the children of the former president. They have called them, questioned them over things that they own, some things that were bought for them by their father. And this whole drama is just centered around his family with the view of trying to embarrass him. That's the only conclusion that we can draw.
Some people are suggesting that the Drug Enforcement Commission was basically doing its due diligence by investigating circumstances when they get tips about illegalities or properties that are alleged to have been proceeds of crime. So they shouldn't be faulted, and that they are just doing their jobs.
Listen, it's very simple. If you receive information to say this may be proceeds of crime, it is your duty to investigate and come up with a reasonable cause as to why you suspect that it could be proceeds of crime. Otherwise, it's bordering on interference with the right to property by individuals. It appears as though, according to the Drug Enforcement Commission, if at all you served in the government of President Edgar Chagwalungu, you are not entitled to own anything. As a matter of fact, they could come for you, even for what you're putting on your body, to say you can't have that because you served in this government, therefore it is proceeds of crime. There's this so-called fight against corruption, which isn't a fight against corruption, but it's a fight to appease the current government, a fight to appease the current government and paint the former government black.
Where do things go from here after formally writing to the Drug Enforcement Commission that the seized properties belong to the former First Lady? Where do things go from here?
It's certainly going to court, because now this is an infringement on our client's right to property. Drug Enforcement Commission will have to come to court and explain if at all there's any reasonable cause as to why they think these are proceeds of crime. Because at the time they were saying these are proceeds of crime, they purported not to know who the owner was. Now that they purported to know, you can't take a conclusion and investigate backwards. You don't do that. That is the wrong premise to start on. So in this particular case, they will have to come and justify how that a person they did not know owned the property is said to have acquired these properties dubiously, or that they did not have the capacity so to own such properties.
I reach attorney Makebe Zulu.
Makebi Zulu is lawyer for Zambia's former First Lady, Mrs. Esther Lungu. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. In Ghana, the Union of Professional Nurses and Midwives is calling for at least a 20% increase in cost of living allowances. The increase, it says, will help cushion the effect of tough economic conditions facing public sector workers, including its members. It says 2014 was the last time the government paid a 10% increase in the cost of living allowance. It expressed concern about the sharp rise in essential commodities and services, adding that the current pay rate is not enough. The calls follow the recent nationwide strike by workers from the education service who demanded improved living conditions. For more on the demands of the health workers, I read John Agbenyevu. He is the spokesperson for the Union of Professional Nurses and Midwives.
This call is just to ensure that the government cushions nurses and midwives against the recent economic hardship that we are experiencing. Ghana have gone through some series of economic problems over the period. Inflation is currently at 27.6%, making living for the Ghanaian nurse and midwife very difficult. We all go to the same market, cost of things are increasing day in, day out. So it's just okay for the government to cushion us so that we can be able to survive these trying times. That's the only reason why we are expecting government to actually add this COLA, 20% of our basic salaries to our current salary, so that while they work on reviving the economy, we will survive on this.
Well, the information minister was recently saying that the government is looking at figures to try to see if there has to be any intervention to try to cushion the effect of some of these economic challenges ongoing in the country. What's your reaction to that?
Yes, well, some of these things are seen as political comments and statements that never come into fruition. That's why we are taking the pragmatic attempt to ensure that the right thing is done. You hear some of these things being said on air all the time. You go back to your pocket, it doesn't reflect. You know, so there's a need for us to be straightforward to government and tell power what we need and what we deserve as workers in the country.
Some people are suggesting that the Ghanaian economy is battered by prevailing international economic shocks, and that everybody is feeling the pinch, including wealthier nations. So people should tighten their belt as things get better. Your response to that?
Yes, well, we are all tightening our belts. The reason why we need a more belt hole to be able to tighten our belts. We have done enough for this country in terms of tightening our belts. We have been told when COVID came, we should tighten our belts. We did. Currently, they are talking about Ukraine and Russian war. Yes, we understand. But what else can we do to help government? We have been paying taxes. Currently, they introduced the e-levy and all that. We are paying all this from the meager salary we are collecting. So how do you expect us to tighten our belts again? The taxes have been increased. We are paying all these things. And when we demand for 20% COLA, that becomes a problem. No, I don't think it should be a problem because we have tightened our belts enough. We are paying the taxes as government demands. And then we demand that we see the effect of these taxes as well.
But what will be the next line of action of your group? Because it does not appear that your call will be adhered to because of the prevailing economic conditions that the government is battling, because the government or the president has taken a decision because of the prevailing economic challenges to seek help from the International Monetary Fund or the IMF. So some people are suggesting that your call might not necessarily get acted upon as soon as you think you should have it. So what's your next step?
Yeah, that would mean pushing us to the tangent we don't want to go. When government pushes us too much that we are not able to take it anymore, we'll end up at where we don't want to go. That is maybe calling for an industrial action where we know the impact of these actions on the health system, knowing very well that the nursing and midwifery profession takes the majority of the workers in the health system. And hence, we are expecting that the government should do the right thing, do what is expected of them, and then we all go our separate ways. Otherwise, they will force us to go to where we don't want to go, and that will not be good for all of us.
A lot of analysts are saying the government is broke. So asking for a 20% increment of your salary might not necessarily hold, since there is no money to meet such a demand. How do you respond to that?
We cannot say the government is broke. We know what money is spent on this country. Is it only broke when it comes to paying workers in this country? And the issue is that the government announced 7% salary increment at the time they didn't envisage how the economy was going to be. This is the first time the government is projecting a salary increment in the previous year, gave us 4% and projected 7% without recourse to economic hardship Now we have taken that 7%, and now we are all battling with economic hardship. So why won't you put in mitigating measures to ensure that those that you have given 7% salary increment, that happened the first time ever in our profession. That should have been done with recourse to what? The fact that there can be a crisis in the economy. That wasn't done. So now we cannot blame the crisis on the increment of our salary. We don't know why we should be the only one tightening our belts all the time. We have done that several times, and we think it's time we get what we deserve. The COLA is not going to be there forever. COLA is when you used to bridge the gap when there's an economic problem. Once the gap is bridged, it's taking off. COLA started way back in 2014. There was COLA. 2021, there was COLA. And so once they bring the COLA and we realize that the economy is stabilized, they can take it off and continue our lives.
John Agbenyevu is the spokesperson for the Union of Professional Nurses and Midwives. He spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. Today, Sunday, more than 2 million people in the Republic of Congo have voted for representatives to the lower house of parliament. Rosie Pioth in the capital, Brazzaville, reports on the atmosphere in the hours leading up to today's vote.
There is excitement in the streets of Brazzaville in the final days of campaigning for the first round of the country's legislative elections. Antoine Bien-Aimé Obam, candidate of the ruling Congolese Labour Party, wants to meet the women of his electoral district in Djiri. He says that this is already a guaranteed victory for him after listening to how the women encourage him. He says that his mission will now be to advocate for the population of Djiri. Independent candidate Axel Wilfried Ndinga campaigned in Brazzaville this week. He shows the same assurance of victory. He says he is happy with how his campaign has gone and is confident for the future. Axel says he has achieved all his campaign's goals and promises change once elected. The Independent National Electoral Commission says about 2.8 million people registered to vote in Sunday's legislative election. Nearly 1.9 million voters are registered for local elections. President Denis Sassou Nguesso's Labour Party is expected to retain a majority in the legislature. Sassou Nguesso has led the country for almost 40 years. More than 1,300 with the alternates are competing for 151 seats in the legislative elections, and 1,627 others are competing in the local elections. The military and police voted on July 4. So they can provide security over the weekend as people head to the polls. For VOA News, I'm Rosie Piot in Brazzaville.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs and Music, from our African collection. But first, in northern Ethiopia, ethnic Tigrayans and camps for displaced people say they are being held against their will because of their ethnicity after being forced from their homes. VOA was able to access two of the camps where inhabitants say they are not allowed to leave despite lacking food, water, and medicine. For VOA, Harry Wilkins reports from Semera, Ethiopia.
On the surface, the Semera and Agatina camps in northern Ethiopia's Afar region appear to be like other camps for those displaced by the country's civil war. But media reports this year indicate they are serving as prison camps for ethnic Tigrayans who were forcibly taken there and are not being allowed to leave. VOA was able to gain rare access to the camps where inhabitants say local security forces in December rounded them up in their hometown of Abala. VOA is not identifying those we spoke to due to concerns about possible retaliation.
The first thing is, we don't have our identity documents. If we go out of the camp, the police will seize us and send us to prison. There are displaced people who are in prison. If you don't have an ID, you can't even go shopping. There is no freedom of movement, even though we repeatedly asked for it. We can go out sometimes, but only with the police escort.
Temperatures in the camps at this time of year regularly rise above 40 degrees centigrade, 104 degrees Fahrenheit. But Tigrayans here say they are not allowed to leave for medical treatment.
There have been seven cases where people have died since we arrived here because of lack of medicine. They died from hypertension, diabetes, and of course, children and the elderly died because of the high temperature.
A mother in Agatina camp, which houses about 700 Tigrayans, says she fears for her children.
We came here 6 months ago. The situation here is so bad. We don't get medicine or enough food. There are 150 children here.
The Ethiopian Human Rights Commission on June 29th acknowledged that 9,000 Tigrayans were being held illegally in the camp and called for their immediate release.
People there are held against their will. That families are not staying together. That men and women, by being separated, you're separating a family. That they are not getting medical help, ready access to medical help when you need help outside the camp, that is. These are the three key indicators, and that is why we are certainly alarmed and concerned about these camps.
This Tigrayan man says he's suffering from tuberculosis.
There is no support here. We are on the verge of death. We spend day and night in this way, and the situation is critical. If the government does not support us, I don't know what our fate will be. Only death waits for us.
Ethiopia's federal government had no immediate response to the Rights Commission's call for their release. The Afar region's Disaster Prevention and Food Security Coordination Office initially agreed to an interview with VOA, then suddenly stopped responding to messages and phone calls. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Samara, Ethiopia.
It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. We begin with the Women's Africa Cup of Nations being hosted by Morocco. Zambia secured the top spot in Group B at the 2022 Women's Africa Cup of Nations final following a 4-1 victory over Togo at the Stade Monley Hassan in Rabat on Saturday. The win set up a quarterfinal with Senegal on Wednesday that will not only be a shootout for a place in the semifinal of the continental competition, but also qualification for the 2023 FIFA Women's World Cup in Australia and New Zealand. Zambia head coach Bruce Wape, after the match, said his side is growing one game at a time and correcting their mistakes by the day as they try to also capitalize on the mistakes of their opponents.
I think I'm happy with today's match. The result was good, and that is what we wanted. Not only that, even the way we played, our girls were we are ready for the game, starting from the way it go up to the final whistle. That was a good performance.
The other Group B game saw an early goal from forward Mikaelia Abam and a late strike by Ajara Nchort to hand Cameroon a 2-0 victory over Tunisia to claim second spot. In Sunday's matches, South Africa needs just a point in their final Group C match versus Botswana to seal top spot in the pool and set up a quarterfinal clash with Tunisia. Defending champions Super Falcons of Nigeria will play Burundi as they seek qualification from the group stage for the quarterfinals. In tennis news, Ons Jabeur's quest to become the first African woman to win a Grand Slam single title in the modern era was crushed on Saturday when the Tunisian was beaten by Russian-born Elena Rybakina 3-6, 6-2, 6-2. Jabeur, in her post-match press conference, says she didn't play her best tennis in the finals.
It's a great first experience for me, and I'm looking for my next finals. I'm sure I will learn a lot from this one, but a positive 2 weeks for me, and I'm just going to keep my head high.
Staying with Wimbledon 2022, Angela Okutoyi made history by becoming the first Kenyan to win the Grand Slam title when she teamed up with Dutch Rose Ingekamp to clinch the Wimbledon Junior Tennis doubles titles on Saturday. The duo beat the Canadian pair of Kyla Cross and Victoria Mboko 3-6, 6-4, 11-9. The Cycling Federation of Nigeria has picked 35 cyclists to represent Nigeria at the second Africa Cup Track Cycling Championship, holding from Thursday to July 17th in Abuja. Cyclists from 20 countries, including Nigeria, will participate in the second Africa Cup Track Cycling Championship competition. The countries include South Africa, Zimbabwe, Egypt, Morocco, Ghana, Ghana, Cote d'Ivoire, Burkina Faso, Benin, Guinea, Burundi, Eritrea, Ethiopia, South Sudan, Uganda, Algeria, Togo, Rwanda, and Tunisia. And now to rugby news. Kenya Simbas and Namibia will fight for the African ticket to the 2023 Rugby World Cup on Sunday after both sides reach the Rugby Africa Cup final on Wednesday. The Africa Cup is doubling up as the 2023 Rugby World Cup Africa qualifier, and Kenya Simbas head coach Paul Odera insists his side does not fear Namibia.
We are very confident this team can put Namibia under a lot of pressure for the full 80 minutes.
Whoever wins tonight's Rugby Africa Cup final will secure their spot in Pool A at the Rugby World Cup 2023 alongside hosts France, New Zealand, Italy, and Uruguay. And finally, the African Handball Nations Championships will begin on Monday in the Egyptian capital, Cairo, with 14 countries participating. The 14 countries that qualified for the championship have been drawn into four groups, two groups of four and two groups of three. And that's it for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Once again, the people of the Sudan, particularly the youth, are sadly being killed in major confrontations with the military. Both sides, the military and the civilians, are engaged in a titanic struggle to determine the future development of the Sudan. In an earlier phase of the struggle, the military joined civilian protests to oust the Bashir regime. Then followed difficult negotiations that produced a transition government composed of the military and civilians. But with the passage of time, it developed that there was a deep distrust between the military and the civilians, and the military finally took over with the retreat of the civilians. We are now in that stage. The current protests in the Sudan are demanding that the military should return to the barracks and that some military officers should be prosecuted for the killing of civilians. At the same time, there is clear evidence that the military is digging their heels and they are not prepared to give way to the civilian protests. This shows there's an impasse and there are no easy solutions available at the moment. In this situation, the African Union may want to consider an arrangement that may involve the League of Arab States and the Islamic Conference. These three institutions should decide on a tripartite initiative that will involve consultations with the people of the Sudan on the broad basis, different regions, not only those in the capitals or major cities. They should receive support first from the protesters and from the military to conduct such consultations. And they should also ask for ceasefire while they move. The purpose of these consultations will be to obtain agreement on a consultative conference. And that conference should be able to determine, one, how to move to elections for a civilian government. Secondly, they should determine a brief period for the transition, and thirdly, on the electoral process for such civilian elections. In this instance, the United Nations may be able to assist and to follow the procedure they did when Namibia was conceding its independence. The agreement should be reached that for the time being, the military will remain in the transition, a brief one, to be agreed, and also to limit the range of its decision making in that transition. This seems to be the only way that one can break the impasse. It is not likely that an agreement will be reached with the military for an immediate transition from protest to a civilian rule. As we have seen last Friday in Libya, when Libyan youths became so frustrated that they stormed the parliamentary in Tobruk and in other cities for the long, winding negotiations involving the United Nations and others for elections in Libya. It is not easy to determine who should participate in elections. So this consultative group in the Sudan will be able to assist if an agreement is reached. And it will also be known that the transition government will consult regularly with such a consultative group until elections are held. This may not be a panacea for the situation in the Sudan, but for the time being, it seems to be one possibility. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent. Viva Africa! Viva Macero! Hey! Hey! Hey!
I do communicate, music translates, Afrobeat brings fitness. Africa, eh? Ilo piano, Caribbean, Nava Latino, Havana of Africa. We love in everybody. When you come to Africa, feel at home, nobody. No matter where you're from, don't worry, my friend. It's so wonderful when people meet. Viva Africa! Shake your body, I say scream and shout. Life is too short. No matter where you come from, Africa is your home. scream and shout. Come dance with me. Chesa, chesa, hey! Chesa, mziki, chesa.
Yeah. nonene Goma kani ufanya na kumbusha Kenya Vile kiswahili ni kitamu Au siyo Nyota
Sunday Music Spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nightline Africa here, the English service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nightline Africa team, including producer Nicole Beckford, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, water may cover the footprint on the ground, but it does not cover the words of